Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a video and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Today, I have an individual who's done some incredible work in the world of finance, Lavanya Ashok. Lavanya, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Lavanya is a partner at the Trifecta Equity. She's the co-lead of the launch of the Trifecta Leaders Fund. She was the managing director private equity of Goldman Sachs, and she's very passionate about investing. So you're the person we have to go to double our money every year. Lavanya, what would you say are three key milestones in your life or your career?
Absolutely. I love the number three. And the name Trifecta also has a three in it. I'll talk about my first love and marrying him after 18 years as milestone number one. Milestone number two was my very first job, which happened to be an internship at Goldman Sachs on Wall Street in New York. A real dream come true for a middle-class girl from Bangalore.
Correct.
And the third is really my first initiation into motherhood. And that happened to be twin motherhood a day after I signed the most profitable exit of my career.
Incredible.
So I guess if I were to look back, those were the three that I'd call out as really memorable moments in my life.
Wonderful. So Lavanya, let's talk about your Trifecta Equity Fund. Tell me about this fund.
Sure. So when I was sitting inside Goldman Sachs, there was a huge amount of activity going on in digital India and the new economy. And I studied at Stanford, sort of personal interest. I was tracking these developments really closely. And over the last decade, we've really seen a stunning rise in the number of breakout technology leaders across categories. And I left Goldman to join Trifecta to do this, because I truly felt there's an opportunity in late stage venture that is as yet untapped, as some of these companies that have been funded and founded over the last decade and a half really start to come of age. I think there is a huge opportunity for investors with a little bit of a different risk profile, where they are willing to have maybe a shorter time horizon, but an expectation of still pretty healthy returns. And I think we are now at that moment. I think we are, standing at the cusp of the golden decade of exits for a lot of these very high-performing companies. And so what we're trying to do is raise a fund that will invest in maybe 8 to 10 of these leading technology companies. We'll take small stakes in them. But we will be very careful about how we select them. And Trifecta is the largest venture debt provider in India. So they have very good access to some of these companies. And so really it is to try and extend institutionally to be a full service provider of financing and to take advantage of this remarkable opportunity in late stage venture.
Wonderful. And for all our listeners, and a very, very large number of our listeners are very young, what is the difference between a venture debt fund and an equity fund?
No, it's a great question. And, maybe just to take a step back, right? Debt is a bounded return product. And equity definitionally is when you sell a little bit of your business at a price. And I think the way venture debt has been growing is a testament to the fact that founders are starting to see equity as something they would like to minimize dilution of. They would like to retain as much ownership as possible for as long as possible. And so just the way you think about capital structure and splitting debt and equity for more mature businesses, in a startup context, we think of that as, venture debt being maybe a 15 to 20% return product versus equity, could be in excess of a 30% return product for companies that are this early. And so it's a way for founders to retain ownership for longer periods of time and then get in more equity as they develop the runway to really sort of be in a commanding position from a valuation perspective.
Okay. And what happens, you know, for in an event when, you know, a startup founder is not able to return the debt? Is it something similar to private equity where they take over the company, or what happens?
So venture debt typically has a first charge on current assets and fixed assets, as well as some intangibles. So in the corner case that we're not able to be repaid, I think we'll be first in line when an outcome is effective for the entire business.
Okay.
But typically, Ashutosh, these amounts are small relative to the equity a company raises.
Correct.
So venture debt is typically 15 to 20% of a round that is being raised.
Okay.
So say you're raising a 10 million equity check, there'll be 1 to 2 million of venture.
Okay.
So it's typically quite comfortable in terms of repayment of that amount for founders and companies.
Okay.
So we've rarely seen that to be an issue. Like Trifecta is less than 1% NPAs in a 6-year history.
Wow. Wow. That's fantastic. So, you know, just now you were mentioning about the incredible possibility of the 8 to 10 tech companies that are coming out, and you think you can take stakes in them. Yeah. Other than tech, what are the other areas that you invest in?
So I'd say tech is the broad umbrella we're interested in. So think of us as, you know, we'll follow the VCs 2-3 stages after they first discover some of these breakout entrepreneurs and companies. But within that, Ashutosh, there are a number of verticals we love.
Mm-hmm.
So I divide that broadly into consumer and enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
And within consumer, there are some vertical e-commerce companies that we think are hugely successful and profitable in really growing those niches that we love. There's social commerce that's really coming of age, especially as we start to make and build for Bharat and not just India. There's essential services and digitization of those that are really providing value, and tech being the key enabler of reach and access there. And on the enterprise side, we love certain aspects of B2B e-commerce. We love certain aspects of SaaS. And we really, you know, have come to be big believers in edtech and certain verticals of fintech and insurtech. Mm-hmm. So I think within tech, there are a number of areas we are developing theses within.
Mm-hmm.
But broadly, we'll stay within that umbrella for now.
Fair enough. And then, you know, when I was reading about you, there is also a fund called the Trifecta Leaders Fund.
Yeah.
What is this?
Yeah. So this is the fund this is the name we've given the fund we're trying to raise on the equity side.
Okay.
We are calling it a leaders fund because these 8 to 10 companies that we've pre-selected have really demonstrated category leadership and have done the hard work of pulling together teams, finding product market fit, and really developing a very strong business model against all odds, right? So if you look at India, there was a 2-year macro slowdown, and then we had COVID for the last year. Despite that, these companies have demonstrated so much resilience, you know, that we took the liberty of calling it the leaders fund for that.
I understand. Okay. So it's those leaders. I was wondering what leaders we are talking about. Okay. Okay. So, you know, tell me, when you're considering an investment, what are some of the key metrics you think of?
Yeah, so it's a superb question. And this is something we're continually refining. But where we are now, we think the first thing we do is really back outstanding founding teams. Because at the end of the day, we are like cheerleaders and support, but we're not really doing the hard work. We're not in the trenches the way the entrepreneurs are. So we're very, you know, we're very respectful of the fact that great founders can do things way beyond our imagination. So I think that's the first thing. And it's not only the founder, but also their ability to attract talent. Are they a talent magnet? Do people want to work with them? Do people stay? Are they good about distributing equity to critical people on the team? So I think that's the first leg. The second is, has the company managed to achieve product market fit in a manner that is now positioning it for really good enduring scale?
Okay.
Can they maintain a strong cadence over a, you know, decade? Because we're not looking short term at these businesses. We're looking for staying power. The third is, have they demonstrated historically the ability to grow? And I just mentioned the tough 3 years India has had. all the companies we've chosen have grown, you know, in excess of 50%, in a lot of cases, in excess of 100% each year over the last couple of years during this trying phase. We're also looking at who are the investors who've come in early and backed these businesses, right? Because those are the ones who define the early governance.
Okay.
Do they have a functional board? Do they have mature investors who are going to support these businesses over a long period of time? And then finally, I think we're looking for founders who have their eyes on the prize, right? What is, you know, what is that large white space that lies ahead? And are they able to continually innovate? Because we've seen a lot of companies that go from zero to 100, but then beyond that, they start to stall.
Okay.
So I think those are some of the metrics and characteristics we're looking for.
Very interesting. So my next question is that for an investor like you, when you come into a company, how involved do you get in the governance of the company?
Yeah, you know, that's a moving target. And a lot of that, Ashutosh, is dictated by the ownership that we will have. So if we have, say, a 10% stake in a business, we would love to have a board seat. Okay. We would love to have the ability to participate in governance in a formal, structured manner. And of course, we'll have commensurate rights with that ownership. But where we're investing in large companies with a small minority stake, right, maybe sub 5%, there I think we'll be respectful of the fact that we're not going to have a seat at the table, but we'll find specific ways to engage. So for example, you know, on this journey to exit, and it is a journey, right? And an IPO, for example, is just a marker in time for the founder. They'll keep growing and scaling. But to maybe handhold them through that process and maybe be part of a smaller group that helps towards putting in place the markers that show you that you're well along the way. I think those are some of the things we can help with in situations where we are a smaller equity investor from an ownership perspective.
Terrific. One more question for Trifecta before I move to the next segment. What are some of the core values you believe in?
Yeah, and this is one of the reasons I was attracted to Trifecta after, you know, a nice decade plus at GS. I feel Trifecta really puts the founders first and at the center of everything that we do as an institution. And I think that has paid huge dividends over time because founders come back, you know, for more products. They give us referrals to other founders that need capital. So I think being a good participant in the ecosystem, being of service to these founders is really at the core of what we do. The second thing is, I think we think of ourselves as a trusted long-term partner.
Okay.
So when Trifecta started out doing venture debt, you know, that's sometimes treated as an episodic transactional relationship, right? But the partners who founded the firm said, what else can we do for you? And out of that was born a treasury solutions business. And now that a lot of these companies have matured, we're doing late stage venture because we think that's where value creation opportunities for the ecosystem lies. So I think thinking long term and being sort of full cycle financiers to these businesses is something we really believe in as a core value.
Okay.
And then I think finally, you know, the magic is in being part of companies that transform India.
Correct.
And really, that's at least what gives me purpose and meaning and what gets me excited. So if we can cheerlead these companies, we can provide them capital, we can, you know, be there during both good and bad times. I think that's really, really sort of something I get excited and jump out of bed to do every day.
Fantastic, fantastic. So let's move to the next segment of our conversation, which is some of your understanding of startups and entrepreneurship.
Sure.
You know, you are a late stage investor, so therefore startups technically don't really qualify. But, you know, one of the things that I've seen with a lot of people who put money in startups is that there is a lot of pressure to go pan India, you know, and I keep telling them, you know, why pan India? My question to you is, at what stage should an entrepreneur say, I want to start scaling up?
I think that's a bazillion dollar question you've asked. You really sort of put your finger on, you know, the crossroads a lot of entrepreneurs find themselves at.
Correct.
And Ashutosh, I think I don't have a one-size-fits-all answer, but I'll tell you sort of how I would encourage young entrepreneurs to think about this, which is really, who are you building this company for? Is it a small group of people or a very large group of people? And I think both can be profitable and enduring businesses. And some businesses derive their value from being niche, small, and heavily profitable, right? And others gain that heft from really serving the masses. So I think who do you want to be and who do you want to serve is really where this conversation starts for an entrepreneur.
Okay.
And that can change, right, along the way, because your customers might delight you with three other reasons why you should now think more ambitiously than you had in the past. But I think really understanding your purpose is the beginning.
Okay.
The second is putting in place the building blocks for that scale, if that is truly your aspiration, right? Be that a team, be that early proving out of unit economics to say, and to your point, you don't have to be pan-India to begin with, right? Suppose you want to start in Bangalore because you feel that's where your first catchment is. Really prove that you can build an enduring business there and then easily lift and shift that to other markets that exhibit those characteristics.
Correct.
So I think proving out to both yourself and others that those could be, you know, investors, they could be customers, they could be even your team, that you can do this in a manner that you envisioned or really, you know, evolve and pivot into an enduring business model.
Okay.
I think those are some of the considerations I would give founders as they think through when is the right time to really press your foot on the accelerator and when is the right time to really iterate on what it is you want to be.
Very interesting. So, you know, I'm going to ask you one more question for all for all our entrepreneurs.
Of course.
One of the biggest challenges most entrepreneurs face is how to raise money and when to raise money, right? And now you've put in a third dimension, whether to take venture or debt.
Yeah.
Venture debt or equity.
Yeah.
I'd love to get your inputs on this.
Yeah. I think it depends on where you are in your journey and on the spectrum of control versus ownership. And I think inviting a partner in early on, from a funding perspective, be that, you know, debt or equity, I think it gives you the heft to go and attack a big problem you see that you think you're ready to solve at scale. But it also gives you, you know, a framework within which you may now have to operate because you made some promises as an entrepreneur, right? And the promises could be, you know, if you take a debt product, then there's payments that have to go out, you know, on a monthly or quarterly basis. And if you take an equity, then you provided a business plan that you were confident you wanted to execute.
Correct.
Right? So I think there are some guardrails that come with inviting people into the tent. And I think there are stages of evolution to this product market fit we discussed earlier, right? There's first, you know, there's a founder fit element, which is, does the founder really feel the problem they started out with is what they want to do as their life's work for the next decade or so? And then you come to what is really the problem statement. And then there's a problem solution fit, which is, can you profitably address that?
Okay.
And I think at different stages, raising maybe an angel round or a seed round, and then moving towards Series A, when you really have some element of that product solution fit, and then maybe going for a big round when you have sort of market scale fit, where you're like, okay, I have in place everything I need that I think I can just go to town with.
Correct.
I think that's sort of what I'd say. And between debt and equity, I think maybe taking a combination is the right approach.
Right.
Because equity gives you the freedom to think more long term because you don't have any interim payments that you need to make. They're an owner in your business. You know, you're very aligned long term. And debt gives you the ability to sell less of your business today, right? And take in a source of capital that is less debt.
Very interesting. Very interesting. So I'm now going to move to the last segment of our conversation, which is some questions for you personally. My first question, Lavanya, is someone who, you know, made it big in Goldman Sachs, now sitting in a large fund in India. From where you are today, as you look back and as you look ahead, what does success mean to you?
You know, I'm very much a work in progress, Ashutosh. You know, you're very kind. I think what comes to mind now is one of my favorite poets, Maya Angelou, once said, you know, success is liking what you do, liking who you are, and liking how you're doing it. And when I first read that line, I really felt, wow, it's such a simple way to encapsulate the feeling of liking the moment, liking your purpose, and really sort of finding your way to accomplish that.
Wonderful.
Right? And there are some days where I feel glimmers of that, and a lot of days where I feel, you know, what would Maya do? Because clearly I'm not doing, you know, what she would. And how do I sort of save this day? But that's how I think about it.
Very interesting.
I think it's a spectrum, and it's also, you know, in the moment, liking who you are, what you're doing, and how you're going about that.
That's an amazing perspective. I haven't heard that from too many people. That's fantastic. And a follow-up question to that is that who or what inspires you to keep pushing yourself?
Yeah, this I have, you know, one towering source of inspiration. So Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who we lost last year, has been somebody who's left a really deep impression on me, and for a number of reasons. I think what I really like is over a long period of time, she just produced an incredible body of work that impacted the lives of millions of people.
Okay.
She did it persistently, diligently, without fuss, through huge hardships thrown her way. She also did it with a lot of gentleness, joy, humor, and humility. So when I look at all of that, I feel, wow. You know, there are days when I feel it's all overwhelming. I have two children, I have a job, and I'm like, yeah, but she made Harvard Law Review when she was helping her husband who went through cancer, and she had a child. So I can do this.
Amazing.
You know, so I have deeply studied her life and work. And it's not just her work on equality, it's her work on making life better for everybody. It's really that principle of social justice that has left a very deep impression on me. So I think there are days when, she never knows this, I guess, but she's inspired millions like myself along the way.
Phenomenal. That's phenomenal. So my next question to you is that if you, Lavanya, were a role model to millions of children who closely followed you and your life choices, what is the one thing you would change in yourself?
You know, I think I'd doubt myself a lot less and be a lot braver to go meet the moment. I think sometimes imposter syndrome is quite real. And when big decisions have to be made or are in front of you, it's not often easy to take that leap. But I think if a lot of people were watching me, I'd feel maybe like I should be braver. I should meet this. I should exhibit more courage.
Okay.
And maybe more just gratitude for, you know, all the joys that have come my way, and life has been kind.
Very nice. Very nice. My next question to you, and I have time for two more questions. my next question is on failure. And I have a new book coming out on failure next month.
I'd love to do that.
And I've often said that, you know, parents in India or South Asia don't teach children it's okay to fail. It's always first, go to the head of the queue. And that manifests itself in our behavior patterns. Yet we fail and we keep carrying on. So my question to you, Lavanya, is what have been some of your learnings from some of your mistakes?
No, it's a deep, deep question. I think the good part about being an investor, Ashutosh, is you're so often wrong in your predictions of the future that you learn to become humble quite quickly.
Okay.
You know, and I think my biggest learning as, you know, a professional of a decade and a half has been to sort of anticipate when things aren't panning out as expected and course correct without ego. And I think this is really a muscle I'm working on as we speak. I'm working on it daily. But very often, we're the least knowledgeable person in the room. There are entrepreneurs for whom this is their life's work. And we're coming in trying to support that journey. There's so many factors way beyond our control. we're bound to get multiple things wrong. But I think the ability to say, oh, I totally didn't realize that or anticipate that, but what do we do now to regroup, to be able to humbly accept the mistake and carry on and not double down on your losses because you're wedded to your own thesis is, I think, my biggest learning.
Very nice. Great response. And my last question, and this is for the thousands of people who are going to listen to all your words of wisdom today. You know, what would you advise a young individual who's starting off on his or her journey in the corporate world or in the world of finance?
Ooh, now I'm actually nervous because people may take my advice. I like the number three, so maybe I'll try to come up with three things I'd guide. One is, I think finance and investing is an apprenticeship business still, especially the part of it that deals with entrepreneurs. And I think that's why jobs haven't been automated, right? There is a big element of behavioral economics that comes into play and the understanding of how the human mind works. And so I think it would be nice if you could apprenticeship yourself or, you know, seek out an apprenticeship with somebody you admire. And that may not be the highest paying job or the most prestigious job, but the amount you can learn from people in this business is really quite spectacular.
Okay.
I think the second thing I would say is find something that suits your style. Find a segment within the large world of investing that you are really personally excited about. And I'll give you an example. My first foray into investing was at a hedge fund, and we were largely focused on the public markets. And I remember feeling this job is so interesting, but it's so monastic. I'm sitting here alone in my office. I'm 24 years old. I have a beautiful view and I'm not talking to anybody. And when I told the founding partner of the fund that a year later, he was like, Lavanya, go find something you love. And if you think that there's a different style that suits you better, you should think creatively about where you can end up. And so I pivoted into the private side and joined Growth Equity post business school as a result. I think it's a much better fit for where my interests lie in actually working with entrepreneurs. The third thing I'd say is we live in a really rapidly transforming world. So if you want to be of service continuously, I think be a lifelong learner. Like, get excited about learning from people younger than you.
Correct.
I love working with young people because it really gives me a very unique lens into where the world is moving and pivoting. So I think that would be my parting advice.
Very nice. Very nice. Great tips. Lavanya, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you. I wish you lots of
success. It was an honor speaking to you. Thank you, Ashutosh. So kind of you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.